You're listening to The Taylor Marshall Show, episode 70, and today we're going to look at how to overcome, in three steps, anxiety, stress, and worry. Howdy, and thank you for tuning into The Taylor Marshall Show. This is the podcast for everyone who wants to create daily habits and learn enough theology to take their faith to the next level. And my goal this week is to share with you some tips that I've been discovering about overcoming anxiety and stress in my own life as a Christian. Well, hey, thanks for listening to the show. Once again, we've got a great episode this week. It just continues to be wonderful and beautiful weather down here in sunny Texas, just like in the 80s. It's absolutely wonderful. I just got back from I know this is politically incorrect. I know some listeners aren't going to like this, but I just got back from a hunting trip, and it was amazing. For those of you that don't like hunting or think it's bad, you know, this is a great way for someone like me to not only have a good time and bond with, you know, my family, my dad, my brother, my brother-in-law, we're all on the trip together, but also to acquire over 100 pounds of high-quality meat. We were hunting oryx, which is an animal from Africa that lives here in Texas now, very plentiful in South Texas, and over 100 pounds. This is grass-fed meat, you know, no hormones, no antibiotics. You know, this is the kind of stuff you have to go to Whole Foods for. And we're able to acquire it for my family. We eat this stuff year round. Last year, you remember, I got the Neil guy, and we've been eating that throughout the year. And it's great quality food, great quality meat. You can't even buy meat this good in the store. So it's a wonderful experience. Just got back from that and feel rested and rejuvenated and back here to record another episode of this podcast. Today we're going to talk about anxiety. It's something that I've been struggling with for, I don't know, well, my whole life, of course, but, you know, especially, you know, having a family and a growing family and having a job and a career and then extra responsibilities and sports and all the things that, you know, affect my life, my wife's life and school and all that, a lot of stress comes in, a lot of anxiety. And I think we modern people living in the third millennium deal with a lot more stress than our forebears did. And you might think, well, they had, you know, more diseases and, you know, way back they had to worry about being eaten by animals or whatnot. But our stress is a continual nuisance. And I've mentioned this before. I think it relates to electricity. It relates to iPhones and computers and being connected to thousands of people through email and the expectations of constant communication with other people, which I think takes away our goal of constant communication with God. That's one of the reasons why I loved going hunting, is we're just out, away, no cell phones. I just got to completely focus on hanging out, talking with my brother or my father. No distractions. You're just on a single task all day long. And you're looking at the clouds, and there's just a slower pace and a lot more calm. And while I was out there, I thought, you know, all the things that have me worried back home, now than what I think about them out here in the country, out here in the bush, they don't seem like that big of a deal. You know, I had a little bit of distance, a little perspective. And then I began to think about anxiety and stress and worry. And then I began to read a little bit about it. I thought this is going to be a good podcast topic. And again, like always, I'm not on the microphone here as an expert. I'm only speaking as one who struggles with anxiety, struggles with stress. But today I want to look at a theological way to handle stress. And our proverb of the week, we always begin with our proverb of the week, is a little bit different. You know, usually I pull something from the book of Proverbs. Sometimes I pull things from Sirach or Wisdom. But this week, I'm pulling a proverb from the Gospels, from the very mouth of our sacred Lord, Jesus Christ. And it comes from Matthew chapter 6, verse 25. And it goes like this. Quote, "Therefore I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you shall eat, what you shall drink, nor about your body, what you shall put on. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing? End quote. You've probably heard this gospel in Mass. You've probably read it before in your own Bible readings. And I read it and I think to myself, yeah, you know, I don't spend too much time worrying about where I'm going to eat lunch, you know, or what am I going to drink tonight? Am I going to have water tonight? And I don't worry about my body, what I shall put on. I don't think, gosh, am I going to have any clothes tomorrow? I mean, I have a, if you're, you know, a Western person, you have a closet with tons of clothes in it, changes of clothes. You probably own over a dozen t-shirts alone, not to mention dress shirts and pants and slacks, and you probably have several pairs of shoes. So, you know, our stress doesn't seem to relate to eating or drinking or putting on clothes. So I think we could be cynical and read this passage from our Lord and say, well, it doesn't apply to me. I'm worried about my pension, or I'm worried about my child losing their faith. I'm worried about my marriage. I'm worried about losing my faith. I'm worried about having doubts about being Catholic. These are the things that I'm worried about, not the things that Jesus talks about. Well, I think we can focus today especially just on that first two phrases in this proverb, if you want to call it that, from Matthew. Therefore, I tell you, Jesus says, do not be anxious about your life. Now, he goes on to give some examples about eating and stuff, but I think the general principle applies to all of us. Do not be anxious about your life. It's a commandment, right? He's giving us a divine imperative. It's not listed in the Ten Commandments, but it is a command that Christ is giving us here. Do not be anxious about your life. So if you're being anxious about your life, you're disobeying something that Jesus said. And that should make us pause. It should make us concerned. Well, how can we be better obedient to Christ when it comes to anxiety? You know, some translations say, do not worry. But I like this one. This is the RSV Catholic edition. Do not be anxious about your life. So today we're going to look at three steps to help overcome anxiety. And by the way, you're always, as long as you live in this valley of tears before the coming of Christ or before your death, there's always going to be anxieties. There's always going to be stresses. You're always going to have worries. But what we need to do is somehow overcome them. And I don't think, you know, being holier than thou and just saying, well, just believe and it'll be better. Of course, that is true, but we need something more practical to help us. Again, I struggle with anxiety and stress all the time. Just ask my wife, Joy, or ask my kids, does your dad get stressed sometimes? Like, oh, yeah. And then they'll probably tell you some stories that would surprise you. So anxiety is in all of our lives. So today we're going to look at a three-step process. And it's not super theological. You know, it's not like, you know, we crack the code in the book of Revelation that shows us how to get rid of stress, or, you know, it's something in one of the Psalms that just gives us a step by step. These are practical, prudential things that you can do when you experience anxiety, because most of us don't have anxiety all the time. It's something that it comes and something that goes. So let's go ahead and take a look now at our featured segment, Three Steps for Overcoming Anxiety. First of all, let's just understand what anxiety is. And I was thinking about this morning, how do we articulate or define this experience of anxiety? And this is the best I could come up with. Anxiety is the feeling of fear. It relates to this passion of fear that we have with relationship to the question, what if? Usually the question, what if, is related to a past experience. So let me repeat all that. Anxiety, being anxious, is related to the passion. Remember, Thomas Aquinas says there's 11 passions. It's related to this emotion or feeling of fear connected to the question, what if, usually contemplating a past event. So let's break all this down. So you feel afraid, anxious, nervous. And by the way, our Latin word of the week, which we'll do after the featured segment, is anxious. It's a Latin word where we get the word anxious, and you're going to love where it comes from in Latin. It's a really good one this week. But when you're anxious, you're asking the question, or your mind is wrestling with this question, what if X, Y, Z? Let me fill in a few. What if I go bankrupt? What if my spouse leaves me? What if my child goes to college and loses the faith? What if I lose my job? What if the boy I like in my class doesn't like me? What if I ask her to marry me and she says no? What if my illness gets worse? What if I die and I don't have enough life insurance? Okay, so there's a bunch of them. Some of those are from my own life. I'll tell you, one of them that's not from my life is, what if the boy in my middle school class doesn't like me? I've never had that anxiety, but all the other ones I've experienced pretty much, I think. Right? What if this bad thing happens? And most of the time, our anxieties are related to a past experience that we want to bring into the future and then ask the question, what if? So, for example, if you have been fired in the past and you have a new job and you do something and you notice your superior is not happy with it, you begin to ask, what if I get fired again and I lose my health benefits and I lose my salary? And then that might lead to another what if. What if I can't pay my mortgage? And then suddenly we're in this cycle of anxiety. And anxiety usually triggers more anxiety because it's triggering a series of what ifs. You just saw how, what if I lose my job? What if I can't pay my mortgage? That could lead you to one like, what if I go into foreclosure? And that could lead you into, what if I have to go into bankruptcy? And what if that destroyed my marriage? And on and on and on. And you can see there's two visuals we can think. We can think of one as like a downward spiral. So you keep looping the thought, circling it around, like swishing it around your mouth. The more you swish something in your mouth, the more particles it's going to pick up from your teeth, from your mouth, which is something usually you want to spit out. Or you can think of it as a stake in the ground, like a wooden stake or a tent stake. And every time you ask the what if, it's like the hammer comes down and hits the stake deeper into the earth. So you say, what if this happens? Boom. And the stake goes deeper. Well, what if that happened after that? Boom. So the what ifs are central to this problem of anxiety. And so whenever you get into one of these cycles, either like you're swishing it around your mouth and picking up more and more and more problems, or you're just hitting the stake deeper and deeper into the ground, or you could think deeper and deeper into your heart, you need to just identify the what if. And the hard part, especially for people like myself who are philosophical, I'm always asking the why question. Scientists focus on the what question. You know, what does it weigh? You know, what is its speed? Like trying to get the empirical data. But the philosopher is asking why. You know, you could talk all day about what the sun is, but then you ask, well, why is there a sun? What is the universe? That's a scientific question. And then to say, why is there a universe? Or why do I exist? See, now you're getting into philosophy. So philosophical people are sometimes more melancholic because they're asking why, and whys can lead you into a what if question sequence. So if you're troubled with anxiety, what you want to do is you want to just say, oh, I'm so nervous, I'm so upset, and you know, maybe you're acting out in certain ways, maybe you withdraw, maybe you burst out with anger. You need to identify the what if, and then you need to say, it's the emphasis here is on the if. It's a hypothetical. It hasn't happened. You know, what if the dog bites me is a hypothetical situation. If there was a dog on your ankle biting you with blood coming out, you would start to take action, right, and try to fix the problem. But saying what if, there's nothing there to fix. And so the best thing to do is to take the what if and bracket it and just recognize what it is. Now, I've tried this a little bit myself, and it's a little bit harder than it sounds. Because when you're anxious, you're usually having a lot of physical manifestations. Maybe you have butterflies in your stomach, you're nervous, right? Maybe you get a headache, right? All these kind of psychosomatic things. But if you can just identify the what if and say, you know, what if I lose my job? I'll just use that one for example. What if I lose my job? Well, I have a job now, and it would be really bad if it did. But by thinking the if, I'm bringing a terrible reality into the present that does not exist yet. And here's the spiritual part. You're helping the devil, because the devil wants you to lose your joy. Christ came to make our joy complete. The devil, therefore, wants to undo what Christ came to do. So he wants you to be anxious and worried. And if your life's blessed and things are going pretty well, he's going to create hypothetical, anxious ideas that will rob and take away any peace that you have. And again, Christ came to give us his peace. The night when he rose from the dead, he appeared to the apostles and said, "My peace I give to you." It's a divine, supernatural peace. So the first step is to identify the what if and then just bracket it. Like put it in a paper sack. Take it out. It's not needed. And just recognize the anxiety is not something in you. It's related to this what if question. Number two. This is so true for myself, and it may not be true for you, but it's definitely true for myself, and my wife has really helped me discover this whenever I have anxiety. Is there a physical cause to your anxiety? Is there a physical reason for you to be anxious? All of us human beings become more fearful and more anxious when we're tired. It's just a fact. You know, I have a lot of kids. We're about to have baby number 8. When kids are tired, they're more scared. When kids are tired, they're more whiny. When kids are tired, they're less satisfied with the food in front of them. And guess what? All of you adults are the exact same way. When you're tired, you're more scared. You ask more what if questions. When you're tired, you're not satisfied with the food in front of you. When you're tired, you're not satisfied with the car you have. When you're tired, you're not satisfied with the house you have. You're not satisfied with the spouse you have, with the life you have. Being tired erodes maturity. Being tired makes you more anxious because your physical brain, which your soul does rely upon, is tired. Other physical things that affect our anxiety are food. Take a bunch of kids. Let's say I take all my... This is kind of a tough one for my wife and I. After Mass, we want to socialize, but some churches have donuts. And of course, if we go to the social hour and they drink juice and they have donuts, they're horrible to be around for the rest of the day, at least for the next 4 or 5 hours, because they're all sugared up, right? They become more, well, I would say annoying. They become more anxious. They fight over things more easily. Why? Because they're experiencing a sugar crash. And that truth, that reality applies to all of you adults. If you eat poorly, if you drink too much, if you eat a lot of sugar, or you're slamming the Red Bulls and tons of caffeine, or you drink too much coffee, you're going to be more anxious. It's just a scientific, empirical fact. Other things that might that are physical that might relate to anxiety are being cramped up in a room with no windows. You know, previously my old office had no windows. My new office has tons of windows. And it definitely affects my attitude and my anxiety. Because when you're in a little room, you feel like you're in a cage. That makes you feel a little bit anxious. So get a new office, or go on a walk, or stop watching TV for hours and hours and get out and get some air and get some space and get some exercise. Again, I know that if I'm anxious about something and Joy says, "Well, go for a run," I go for a run, I start to sweat, my brain gets filled with oxygen, and the anxiety goes away. So there are physical triggers that we have. This is the second step here, is try to realize, is there maybe a physical trigger? If Joy and I, my wife, if we start getting into an argument, usually somewhere in the middle of the argument, one of us will say, you know what, I'm just really tired. I can see this is not that big a deal. I'm just tired. Let's just get some rest. You're like, you're right. This is stupid. Why are we arguing over what we're going to have for dinner tomorrow or whatever? You know, silly things. But it's because we're tired. You know, there's a new baby, or we had a long weekend with a lot of activity in it. We didn't get rested and we had to get up going hard on Monday morning. And so when you're tired, you get anxious and you worry about stuff. And that's exactly how I am. If I get a lot of good sleep and a restful weekend, I can come into a Monday and everything is going great. But if I'm slammed and I'm exhausted or I've been sick, I get to worry about things that I never worry about the rest of the year. It's because there's a physical fatigue, and that leads to anxiety. Now, the third step, and this is really critical, I think, in changing your lifestyle to insulate you from anxiety. And I'm not a master at this. This is where I'm the weakest. But the third one is, every time you have an anxiety, you need to make a concrete decision about the what if or the anxious situation, about whether to wait or to take immediate action. Usually taking immediate action will kill a worry. Sometimes if we're too passive and we just wring our hands and we don't know what to do, the longer we do that, the more worried, the more anxious the situation becomes. Sometimes you could just say, God, it's 50-50, I'm not sure what to do, I'm going to go with this one. Or you pray about it, and you're like, I just kind of feel this is the one to go, and you do it, and you move forward, and you put that anxiety to rest, and you deal with the consequences and go forward. A lot of life is like that. But sometimes you don't have all the facts, and to go ahead and commit to a plan might create even more anxiety and stress. And that's when you need to wait. Let's look at an example. So let's say, you know, a very stressful thing in many people's lives is losing their job. So let's say that your manager says, you know, we may be cutting back over the next year. I just wanted you to know. Okay, so that's going to cause some anxiety. You think, well, am I going to be cut? Is he telling everyone that? Is he just telling me that? And you start to ask the what if questions. Right? And then you need to say, well, is it, you know, have I had lunch today? Am I tired? Of course, do the physical reasons like we talked about in step two. But in this third step, you need to say, is there something that I can do, or do I just need to wait? Do I need to take action, or do I need to wait? My advice would be, well, you need to take a little bit of action. You need to think, okay, well, if there's going to be cuts, I need to prove my value as an employee, as a worker. So I'm going to go ahead and think of new ways to add value to this company so that my superior, my manager sees it. Take action. And just by doing something like that, by taking action, you're going to have more pride in your work. You're going to have more confidence, more self-respect. So that would be an example of taking some action. Another one might be, should I marry this person? That's another, you know, can be a stressful question. Should I marry this person? Well, probably the best one would be, well, I'm just going to marry her and find out. I'm just going to take action. That might not be the best way to go. Maybe it's wait. But if you're going to wait, go ahead and put a time limit on it so you can measure it. Say, well, I'm going to wait another month, 30 days. I'm not going to make any decision. I'm going to wait 30 days and pray about it and maybe get some advice from someone I respect, a mentor. I'm going to wait 30 days. And then at the end of 30 days, I'm going to say, do I need to wait another 30 days, or do I need to go ahead and make a decision? By choosing to do something or choosing to not do something, you're taking control of the situation. And I think our Lord wants us to take control. Notice back in Matthew, he doesn't say, you know, well, never go shopping for clothes and never go to work to get money. Don't go to the market and buy vegetables and meat. Just sit at home and pray to me. And if you pray hard enough, it's going to be like that movie Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. You know, a hamburger is going to fall out of the sky and land on the roof of your house. You go out there and you eat it and you keep praying. Some French fries come, an ice cream sundae. And then sure enough, you know, a suit falls from the sky. You can wear that to work on Monday. No, that's not how God wants us to live. He wants us to pray, and he wants us to either act or to wait. And whenever we pray, God never, there's no such thing as unanswered prayers. I know Garth Brooks had a big hit about unanswered prayers. He had a country music song about that. It's not true. God always answers your prayer. He either says, yes, I will give that to you. I will do this for you. Or he says, no, I will not give this to you. I will not do this for you. And every time he says no, it's for your well-being. If a 16-year-old says, I really want a Ferrari, God, I really want one. God's going to say most likely no to that teenager. It's not good for him on several levels, right? But usually, this is the hard thing, usually God's answer is not yet, or wait, or trust me on this. Very rarely do you ask for something and then the next day or that night does it happen. That has happened in my life. It is true. I've asked for things in Jesus' name and they happen right then in an instant. You know, I remember being on a trip and the engine was overburned and we prayed over the engine and turned it and it was back on, right? It's just kind of a miraculous thing that happened right then. But usually when you're praying about the big things in your life or the things you're anxious about, God will say, not yet. Not because he wants you to be stressed out and anxious, but because there's some sort of lesson he's going to grow you and teach you in a really profound and powerful way. So just a bit of review here before we get into our tip of the week and our Latin word of the week. Step one, know that anxiety is related to your passions. Circling around a question, what if? Identify the what if and bracket it. It's not a reality. It's not true. Secondly, is there a physical reason, that a physical cause that you could change that would make you less anxious about this or less anxious in general? Could you go on a walk? Could you drink less alcohol, drink less caffeine, eat healthy, get rid of all those simple sugars, you know, all those carbs that make us fat and feel bad and crash our blood sugar? Could I eat different lunch and feel better? And then third, always have a plan of action. And that's either to do something related to this anxiety, or to make a plan to wait for a predetermined time period. You know, should I get married? I'll just wait my whole life and find that out. Probably not the best strategy, especially, you know, if you're a Catholic, should I go into the religious life? You know, should I be a priest? Should I get married? Usually you want to give things a trial for a period. You know, discern the priesthood for a time. Discern marriage for a time. Court someone of the opposite sex and pray about it and see, right? But give it a time. You know, you don't want to date a girl for 35 years, right? You've got to, at some point, you know, fish or cut bait. That's the third tip, is you have to wait or take action. So there it is, three steps to overcome anxiety. I am by far not the model stress-free person, but I have found that by following these three things, I can reduce stress, bracket it, and be more productive. So let's go ahead and move on now to our tip of the week and our Latin word of the week. All right, before we jump into the tip of the week, I just want to remind you that I'm giving away a free study guide to my novel about St. George and the Dragons called Sword and the Serpent. And you can get that Sword and Serpent study guide for free as a download over at swordandserpent.com. It has questions for a small group or for yourself or for For example, homeschoolers, for kids that relate to, and adults, to Roman history, saints, etc. And if you're interested in it, in the book itself, please check it out over at Amazon.com. It's the Amazon number one bestseller in its genre. The book is called Sword and Serpent, A Retelling of St. George and the Dragon. Also, just want to welcome everyone who joined the new St. Thomas Institute last week in our spring enrollment. It is sold out. Enrollment is closed. So if you go to newstthomas.com, you can no longer sign up there because we are full. But welcome to everyone who came aboard. Our mascot at the new St. Thomas Institute is the muskox in honor of St. Thomas Aquinas, who's known as the ox. So welcome all of you mighty, mighty musk oxen to the new St. Thomas Institute. I hope you've started your first module and you're getting started and you're learning about theology and philosophy and Thomas Aquinas and Christ and Our Lady. There's so many resources there. I hope you've already delved into them and are learning. And of course, leave comments. We always love to answer your questions and see what you guys are learning. It's a lot of fun. So welcome all of you into the new St. Thomas Institute. If you're interested in joining, I'm sorry that it's not available right now, but if you would like to get on our priority waiting list and be notified as soon as we have spots available in the future, I would encourage you to go over to newstthomas.com. That's newstthomas.com. And if you scroll down just a little bit, you'll see where you can put yourself on our priority waiting list, and we'll send you a private email when there are spots available in the future. So you can join us in there and take online Catholic classes. Lots of fun. I enjoy it. I love being with all of you students, all of you members at the new St. Thomas Institute. So, tip of the week. It's related to our topic today of anxiety. It's attitude and food. Attitude and food. I just finished my first what they call Whole 30. Some of you have probably heard of the paleo diet or the paleo lifestyle. And while I don't agree with all the ideology, though I think there are some interesting biblical parallels, and I've written a blog post about that, but I haven't posted yet. I'm still deciding if I want to weigh in on the paleo debate. So if you're interested in hearing more about that, leave a comment in the show notes for this episode, episode 70, over at taylormarshall.com. But here's what I've noticed. So I've gone 30 days with no grain, no bread. Of course, I received the Eucharist, which is essentially substance, Jesus Christ, body, blood, soul, divinity. But still, there's the accidental properties of bread. No bread, no rice, no barley, no grains whatsoever, no legumes, so no beans. I haven't had any of that for over 30 days now. I had no alcohol for 30 days, and just lots of really good lean meat and eggs and things like that. Well, here's what I noticed. The first week was really tough. You know, they refer to it as like a low-carb flu because you don't have many carbs in you. You feel kind of bad. You're also kind of detoxing because you're not eating things like cake and ice cream and Twinkies and not that I ate a bunch of that stuff before, but I was just eating a really high-protein diet and been very healthy with lots of vegetables, squash, salad, etc., that kind of stuff. And then I also kind of focused a lot on like salmon and fish during these 30 days. I started noticing about 15 days in, a better attitude, sleeping solidly through the night like a baby, having more dreams. I had a lot more dreams while I was on this 30-day paleo experience. Lost a lot of weight, lost about 8 pounds, feel good. I noticed that my skin feels better as well. So I think there was a kind of a good transformation there, and I'm going to continue to experiment with it. But one of the things I've noticed is the change in attitude in relation to food. And I would challenge you, you know, if I ever ate pancakes or donuts, I learned pretty early on in my life, if I ate a donut or if I ate a bunch of maple syrup in the morning, by 11 o'clock, I'm real grouchy and I can't remember people's names. You know, I'm a little bit hypoglycemic and I kind of get a little fuzzy and faded. and sometimes I can get aggravated. So I learned early on I need to have a lower carb diet. And on this last 30 days, basically without any of those simple carbs, certainly no syrup, but not even things like, you know, bread or rice, I was much more even keeled for 30 days. And I like that. You know, it's not so much, you know, losing the weight or whatever. It's having kind of a more of a clarity and not getting, you know, hungry at 5 o'clock, but kind of having a fullness and then just without the sugar crashes. So my tip of the week is to maybe try this Whole 30. Try eliminating, oh, I also forgot, not only no grain and no rice and all that, but also no dairy, which is hard for me because I love cheese and I especially love ice cream. And I haven't had that in a long time now. But to remove these things from your diet and see if it changes the way you act, feel, and think. We all know that food does affect our attitudes. So do some active experiments. And who knows, maybe you'll lose some weight along the way. Maybe you'll feel better. Maybe you'll put on some muscle. Maybe it'll help your hair, your skin. Who knows? You might find out that you have an allergy. Maybe you have a slight lactose intolerance, or maybe you really do have a gluten allergy and it's affecting you. By doing these things, you're going to make yourself more physically healthy. And I always stress this on the show, on this podcast. Our physicality is important. We are not, you know, Hindus or Buddhists. We are Christians. We believe in the resurrection of the body. We believe that God became man. He assumed a human nature. We believe in the dignity of the human body. And we know, as Thomas Aquinas says, that a human person is body and soul. And they react with each other. And our spiritual well-being is related to our physical well-being. If that weren't the truth, Christ wouldn't have gone around curing people and feeding people. When he cures someone, he's helping their body so he can help them spiritually. When he's feeding people, he's helping their body to help them spiritually. So we Christians, especially we Catholics who have a sacramental worldview, need to realize that our spirituality is connected to what we eat, what we put into our body. So tip of the week, attitude and food. Attitude and food. Hey, try a Whole 30. Get rid of something. I would encourage you to get rid of grains and or milk, probably both, all especially all the junk food, and see how you feel. You're going to feel kind of bad for a week no matter what you change in your life. Give it a 30 days, see how you feel, and hey, let me know. Leave a comment. I'd love to see if you had a similar experience to me. I'm actually going to keep doing it because I like the way I feel. So let me know. Let's be in touch. I'd love to hear if you have a similar response to a change in your diet. Okay, Latin word of the week. Oh, you know what? Before we do Latin word of the week, I was blown away by you guys, the listeners of this podcast, the Taylor Marshall Catholic Show. You know, usually whenever I prep up the show, I do show notes and I, you know, I pick out a proverb. I find a good Latin word that I want to share. I think of a featured segment. Usually the featured segment is something that I struggled with in the previous week or I've been thinking about for a month, or sometimes Joy and I will be driving on a date and we'll talk about something. So that'd be a great podcast. Like, hey, you're right. That'd be a good podcast. That's how I put things together. And then right before I record the podcast, I go in and I read the reviews because that kind of gets me excited and gets me pumped up for the show. And I love to see what you guys are getting out of the show. And I love to learn what helps you. And so I usually go in there and I usually give the shout outs. If you leave a comment on iTunes, I like to say your name. And sometimes I read some of the things that you write. And usually there's, you know, three, sometimes on a good week, there'll be five new reviews in there and I'll read them and I'll get excited and I'll give you the shout out. Well, this week I have 17 new reviews. They're waiting about this podcast and they're all awesome. I can't believe how generous you guys are. And I think it's just because there's more and more people maybe listening to the show or finding it helpful, or maybe the last few episodes were more helpful than normal, but tons of reviews. So to do everybody justice, I'm going to give you a shout out. And if you would consider leaving a review, I would really appreciate you doing that. As you know, this show is hosted on iTunes, which is by Apple, which is a secular environment. So the more people that rate it and leave reviews, it helps it in that algorithm to be found by other people who are maybe looking for Christian advice or Christian podcast or Catholicism or theology. So if you think this is a great resource, if it's helpful to you, please just take a minute or less and write a review. And the way you do that is you go into iTunes and you search Taylor Marshall Show or Taylor Marshall Catholic Show. And then it'll come up in there and you can hit subscribe. That'll get you the show every week. But you can also leave a rating and you can give a 1-star to a 5-star. So leave whatever you think the show deserves. And then you can also leave a comment. And so we're going to go ahead and give a shout out to the new people who left comments. So Kilkenny Kid, he left a 5-star review. Thank you so much, Kilkenny Kid. And then I've got APB Thoreau. And I like this one because APB Thoreau is not a Catholic. Here's what he wrote. I am not Catholic, but I really enjoy Taylor's podcast. I like his format, proverb reading, technical computer mini advice, and other quick teaching, inspirational talk of the week, and questions. I like his music phrase between each segment, let the listeners know we're moving to the next one, etc. The body of his programs are thoughtful, educational, and inspirational. I really like Taylor's voice. It reminds me of the voice of the priest in the film Doubt. Doubt starring Meryl Streep, a very thought-provoking film. So thank you so much, APB Thoreau. Thank you. It's good to know that there are non-Catholics listening to the podcast, and that makes me happy, excited. Also want to give a shout-out to MB Cincinnati. MB writes, I've listened to a number of the podcasts. Each is informative and uplifting. At the end of the day, I like to browse topics for a topic I want to know more about. Taylor never disappoints. So thanks so much, MB. Also, B. Rushmore. He says, I'm not sure how I stumbled upon this, but after several months now, this has become my favorite podcast and is deserving of each of the 5 stars I am giving it. So B. Rushmore, thank you so much. Again, this is a great example of someone who stumbled upon the podcast, probably because you, the listeners, have been leaving ratings in iTunes, which helps people find it. Also want to give a shout out to Bro Gatos. Thanks for the 5-star review. Dan Cornell, he leaves a 5-star review. He writes, Dr. Marshall's podcast, along with his new St. Thomas Institute, is what made me interested in learning theology. Dr. Marshall has a great way of making theology fun and accessible for everyone, regardless of your background. So Dan, thank you so much. Also a shout out to Leon Tamer. Thank you, Leon. Also Matthew Cantrell. He writes something really nice. It's just so nice. I don't even want to read it because it makes me blush. So thank you, Matthew Cantrell. Appreciate that. Also, a shout out to Sky Chinger. He said, my first experience learning from Taylor Marshall came from the new St. Thomas Institute. From NSTI, I eventually made my way to this podcast. This show has become a staple podcast during my 40-minute drive to work every day. So thank you so much. Also, Mish. Mish writes, these podcasts are fantastic. Also, Anthony, Virginia, this Easter, I became Catholic. Prior to that, I was a Jesus Protestant. I raised my 4 children in the Baptist faith with joy. About a year ago, the Lord began to reveal truths in Scripture that somehow I had missed as a Protestant. As I navigate the Catholic writers that sometimes feel way over my head, this podcast is an absolute treasure to me. Key truths are explored and explained in a clear, authoritative, and friendly way. I recommend this entire series of podcasts to Protestants and Catholics alike. So, Anthony, thank you so much, and welcome to the church. Came in this Easter. Everybody pray for Anthony. Welcome him into the church. Also, a shout-out to Eli B3, Meow STRS, some of these names are interested, Stavi 123, Superino's Mom, she says, great topics, 5-star, valuable for Catholics for such a time as this, as well as for non-Catholics. Also, Colorado Christie writes, I finally get it. Thank you for this very succinct explanation. She's talking about the podcast on Faith and Works. And last of all, thanks for being patient with me, TX Elizabeth. She says, I found this Catholic podcast to be so informative. Taylor Marshall is very articulate in a non-boring way. So thank you. I'm glad that I do this in a non-boring way. If you're a teacher like myself, a professor, that's what you're always trying to go for. Everybody, you know, we learn all this information and we study it, but the hard part is to have the enthusiasm to make the student also enthusiastic and want to continue to learn more, because you can only teach so much. Ultimately, you want to inspire students to take it up and go even deeper and even further. So without any further ado, we'll jump in here to the Latin word of the week. Oh, and just again, thank you to everyone in the past who's left reviews over at iTunes. It makes me feel great. It's a great encouragement to me. And again, it's helping people find the podcast. Okay, so I said early in the podcast that the Latin word of the week was really good, and I stand by that. It is unctuous. Unctuous. A-N-X-I-U-S. Unctuous. And you can probably guess what English word it's related to. Anxious. You know, we just add an extra O in there, but it is the word unctuous. Anxious. Now, what's interesting about unctuous is it comes from the Latin verb angere. Well, if you fall in classical pronunciation, angere. This word means to choke, strangle, or squeeze. So anxiety is related to being choked, strangled, squeezed. Now, unctuous in Latin means pretty much what anxious means in English. It means troubled in mind. The Romans would use this to talk about psychological stress, unctuous. But it derives its origin from this verb to be strangled, to be choked. And this is, I think, you know, the problem with anxiety is it's not a physical strangulation, but it's a mental strangulation. And I think being strangled might be one of the worst ways you could die. Just think about that. It'd be a horrible way to die. And so to live in a state of mental strangulation is one of the greatest curses that we could experience as human beings. And this is why Christ says, don't be anxious about your life. Don't be mentally strangled by these what-if questions that aren't even realities in your life. So there it is, Latin word of the week. I want to thank all of you guys for listening to the podcast, for all of your prayers. Just a quick update, Joy's doing great with this baby number 8. We had a sonogram, and he or she is looking fantastic. We're referring to her or him. One of you left a comment saying we should name this baby Octavius or Octavia because it's the 8th child. So we're jokingly referring to this child as Octavius. We probably won't name the infant Octavius, but until he or she's born, the nickname is Octavius number 8. Baby's doing great. Joy's doing great. Thanks for all the prayers. Until next episode, remember, our Lord Jesus Christ said that you are the light of the world and the salt of the earth. So go out there and be salty. Hashtag don't be anxious. Hey, if you want to hear some thoughts about my recent hunt in relationship to the Old Testament priests and how they slaughtered or butchered animals for animal sacrifice, it was a lot of hard work, let me tell you. Head on over to taylormarshall.com. There's a new blog post there. And also, if you want to see pictures from the hunt, head over to Dr. Taylor Marshall on Facebook.
This podcast was brought to you by the new St. Thomas Institute. Discover online Catholic classes and earn your certificate in Catholic theology at the new St. Thomas Institute. To register for online Catholic classes, please visit newstthomas.com. That's newstthomas.com.